I should say my name's Chris and I'm an alcoholic, but
hey,
you know,
Chris.
It's officially a meeting now, isn't it, when you say that? Really, really great to see everyone. Just quickly, I just want to say thanks to everyone for, you know, giving us your time, really. You've given us your time. You know, it's all right for us to sit up here and do this, but ultimately we ain't got an audience. It'd be pretty hopeless talking to nobody. So, I do about four or five of these a year because I need to do this stuff to inspire me to go back out into the fellowship and keep doing this. And so it gives me a shot in the arm. And what gave me a shot in the arm yesterday was to see you guys doing this, doing it. You know, I said to Ross, like, you wouldn't have seen this 30 years ago. There's no way knowing you would have seen a group like this and people all going right in the inventory because it was unheard of. And so, you know, you're the next generation. We're the next generation of AA members coming through that have got to pass it down to the next generation. So this thing stays intact for our sons and daughters and grandchildren to be here. And so we're going to talk a little bit about steps 10 and 11 and 12. We'll try and punch it out pretty quick. And, well, I shouldn't say that because, you know, it said something interesting at the end of step 9. It says, you know, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And through the book it talks about, you know, faith without works is dead. You know, Ebby warned Bill, you know, if you fail to enlarge upon your spiritual life, you're not going to survive the certain low spots ahead. And so they're all already warning us that there's going to be troubled times ahead, and I have to stay vigilant with this stuff. I have to do it. And I think for me, this alcoholic, I realised after, you know, probably about, I was probably between 15 and 20 years sober, where I felt that something wasn't just quite right. I couldn't put my finger on it, what it was, but I just didn't feel quite right. I couldn't tell you what was wrong. And I got a new sponsor, and he asked me some vital questions. He said, how are you doing in steps 10, 11, and 12? I said, oh, yeah, no worries, knocking them over, not a problem. You know, step 10, you know, I just watch during the day, and 11, yeah, do a bit of prayer, and you know, I'm going to lots of meetings. And what I started to understand that I really was just scratching the surface of that stuff, and I didn't fully understand. And so luck was that he gave me what I thought was a novel idea back in 2010, some written stuff to do around this stuff. And my first reaction was, I don't want to do that. But I did, I've asked this guy for help with those three areas of my life, and he starts to give me some instructions, and straight in my head saying, I don't want to do that, it's more work. And that's the insanity of it. I ask someone for help, they're going to show me how to give me that help, and I'm reluctant to do it. And so I just started doing it anyway. And he often talks about, you know, that, you know, I can't think me way into this, I've got to action me way into this stuff and just do the actions and see what happens. And I think for me, step 10 is all about that, just having a crack at doing the action. So we'll read through it. I'll tell you some stuff that I've been doing with it lately, which is really blown me away around this stuff, and hopefully you get something out of it. So we're on page 84, and it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal image and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So, you know, I read that and I think, well, I'm doing that. That's just practicing 4 to 9, isn't it? That's what they're saying. I've just got to keep practicing 4 to 9. You know, and to a certain extent it's true. And I read an article not long ago where it says, well, you might want to look at that the other way. Maybe the big book's shown you steps 4 through to 9 to show you how to do step 10, not the other way around. And that made perfect sense to me because steps 10, 11 and 12, people call them maintenance steps. I don't call them maintenance steps because for me they're the spiritual growth steps. I'm not maintaining. If I want to maintain something, means I'm going to stay here. I don't want to stay here. I want to keep growing spiritually and being the best version of me that I can be. So I kind of look at it that way now, that what we've been through this weekend is just really setting me up for the step 10. So that I can, it's shown me how to do a step 10. So steps 4 through 9 have shown me how to do a step 10. And for me, that was it's been a game changer. It says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we've cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the spirit. So what does that mean? I've entered the world of the spirit. So I've entered this new way of living that's completely different to the way that I've been living before. We've talked about it most of the weekend, about we've turned now. We've done a 180 degree turn. All of a sudden I was going in that direction, now I'm going in a different direction. So to me, that's into the world of the Spirit. Now, it's my job to stay in the world of the Spirit, okay? Not to, you know, drift in and out of it. It's a bit like that, hand it over, take it back, hand it over, take it back. I want to try and stay in the world of the Spirit. And so how do I do that? Well, there's certain practices that I need to do to try and stay in the world of the Spirit. I want to, it says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So it's not saying that I'm maintaining anything. It's just I'm growing. I need to grow here. And it says this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. So I'm not going to get this. It's not going to just happen straight away. It's going to take some discipline. And, you know, at the end of step 11, never a truer statement. The big book says we alcoholics are undisciplined a lot, so we try and discipline ourselves in the simple way we've just outlined. And so it's going to be a discipline thing. So a bunch of guys that I sponsor, we catch up every week on Zoom, and we're just going through different stuff, you know. Some of it's not AA approved. It doesn't really matter. I'll read anything that's going to open my mind to stuff, and we're looking at this stuff, and it really hones in on step 10, and it starts to talk about, okay, hands up, who's doing step 10? And of course, people put their hand up, yeah, well, I reckon I'm doing step 10. They said, are you really doing it? What are you actually doing? And the first thing that it tells me to do is it says we continually watch, okay? So how many people continually watch? Continuous means continually watch, all day long, continually watch. You know, I don't think too many people, or I could be wrong, I certainly couldn't put me out and say, well, yeah, I'd much rather watch you. I'm better at watching you guys. I can watch and see what you're all doing wrong, but I don't want to watch me. I'd rather watch you. And so what we did, we took that literally and said, okay, we're going to continuously watch all day long, okay? And this bit that I read said, you know, that we find that impossible to do. We can't do it, okay? Me on my own power cannot do that. And so that's where prayer comes into step 10, is that I've got to ask God to help me to continuously watch. And it's a constant reminder all day long. And I think I was laughing with Peter last night. We've done all sorts of stupid things, like have a lucky band on your hand to remind you to talk to God, you know, set your phone to ring every hour to remind you of God. And you might think that's a crazy thing to do, but I tell you, if you do it for about a week, it starts to become a perpetual thing, and you start to look at that stuff. And so we took that first thing and said, okay, that's what we're going to do. We're just going to watch. We're not going to do anything. We're just going to watch. Not going to try and fix anything. We're just going to keep praying to God and ask Him to watch what I'm doing during the day. And boy, what an interesting thing to do. You know, I think that I'm running really well and going really well. And when I really start to watch my thinking, and I start to watch the way I'm interacting with people, and the way that I'm slyly manipulating people to get what I want. I hate using the word game changer, but I started to look and see, you know, where I was failing and where I was falling down. And so we did this for a week, and then we met back up and said, well, what's the next direction? And it says, watch for selfish dishonesty, resentment and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. And so, okay, so now it's giving me a set of instructions to watch for. I'm looking for resentment, fear, dishonesty and selfishness. And so the next week, off we go, we're watching for this stuff. And what I noticed was that when these things would crop up, I'd try and manage them. In Peter's great talk about the fear imagery, it says a very interesting thing. It says, how has self-reliance failed me? Okay? So when these things are cropping up, like a fear will come up, I go into, how can I fix this? What can I do about this fear? How am I going to get around this? You know, I'll have to go and do this and do that and sort this out and do that. Resentment comes up, you know. What did I say yesterday? I like to wallow in that false sense of power sometimes when I get resentful. And so what I started to see, that I wasn't asking God to remove it at once. there was a real pause, and that pause might be a day, it could be 2 days, it could be 3 days. I wasn't asking straight away. So we set ourselves a task, was that our task for the week was to ask God straight away. Whenever something come up, we're watching, we're asking God to help us watch. When something comes up, we ask God for it to remove straight away. And then the task was that you had to call someone in within that group and discuss it with them. And the rule was, if someone called you up, the first question you ask was, have you asked God to remove it? And if they say no, hang up. And so what that did was force you to ask God before you made the phone call. And again, game changer, guys, I'm telling you, game changer. Resentment, same thing. And then it talked about, which I thought was interesting, it says, you know, when you ring up to discuss it with someone, I'm not looking for answers. Hopefully the person that I'm ringing up is having the same problems that I'm having and doing it. I'm not ringing to discuss it with Pete so that he can go, there, Chris, or give me advice. It's just so I can talk about it. This is what I've done. I've been resentful at my wife, you know, spends too much money. None of you guys have trouble with your partner. God, please take it away. It's causing a rift between me and my wife. And then Pete, another resentment, you know, resentful at Mandy again, and it dissipates. It's gone. It goes. So I don't have this long-winded needing to do a thorough four-step, you know, every 6 months, because I'm cleaning up as I go along. And to say it didn't change the way I live life and the way that I interact with people is an understatement, an absolute understatement. So I started to see, geez, I've preached a lot about step 10 over the years, but I haven't really been doing it to the extent that it talks about. And what I noticed was that, you know, I didn't think step 10 was about contact with God. And it's all, to me, now it's all about contact with God. You know, it's all through this weekend we've talked about, you know, we've got this stuff blocking us from the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, we get to this point in the book where we've opened the curtains. You know, my job now is to keep those curtains open, not close them. And how do I do that? And to me, this... Bill was a very, very clever, very, very clever man to write the way he's written Step 10, because he doesn't want me to keep closing those curtains all the time, you know. Hands up those who, over the years, keep closing the curtains and going, I need to open them again. You know, why do I keep closing the curtains? And I started to see that was because I was falling down in this area. And it went one step further, because then the question was, well, what do you do with a resentment that still hangs on? It doesn't go when I ask God to remove it straight away. And he talked about, well, after 3 days, if that thing still linger on, then you need to sit down and do a formal and write it out. But what I've found is very few get past asking God to remove it straight away. And I don't know about you guys, but I think my high power likes that I contact him pretty much on a regular basis every day and ask for help. I think he thinks when I'm running the show and running on Chris's and don't need you today, I'll call you when the shit really hits the fan. You know, it's like, you know, I think, and so for me it's kept me in conscious contact with God. And I always read over the years, and the 12 with 12 talks a lot about it, about that, you know, of themselves, steps 10 and 11 are very powerful steps, you know, self-examination, prayer and meditation are spiritual practices alone, but if you combine those things, they become a very powerful tool. I'm paraphrasing it, but it becomes a very powerful tool as a combination. And so I started it started to improve my conscious contact with this power that's given me this way of life. And God and his wisdom is a funny, my God is a funny God. You know, I decided 2 years ago to get a caravan and a car and start travelling Australia with my wife. And my plan was that we're going to travel Australia. I didn't know that was going to give me the perfect opportunity to practice step 10 on a daily basis, because you spend 7 hours a day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, month in, month out with one person, and there's nowhere to go when you're in a caravan. You can't go, you go to your room. It's like,
you're stuck in a caravan, you've got to sort things out very, very quickly. And so isn't it funny how life throws us up opportunities to practice this stuff without even realising it? And so my wife laughed about it the other day. She goes, we didn't set out to be doing this step 10 stuff, and it's been a natural progression because we have to do it, otherwise we'll kill one another. You know? So I'll just read through it, and I'll talk a little bit about, you know, and again, it's not an overnight matter, guys. It's not, you're not going to perfect this in 1 week. I've been doing it for probably a couple of months now. I'm still not perfect at it. Sometimes it slips me mind. I've got these things on to remind me to keep talking to God. It's just, I need little prompts like that. For me, it doesn't come easy. My whole time in AA has never come easy for me, I can tell you now. I've had to struggle and fight and make a lot of mistakes and fall down and keep getting back up again and make it and doing shit that I probably shouldn't have been doing, but I kept at it and kept at it and kept at it, and I'm glad it hasn't been easy for me, because everything that's come easy to me, guess what, it gets thrown aside for the next thing that comes along. So I'm glad if you're struggling, and that's not a bad place to be, because you'll cherish this much more if you struggle with this stuff. So so make amends quickly if you've harmed someone. You know, it's pretty straightforward. You know, I'm very eager to not say I'm sorry, but go and clean up stuff straight away now, because I don't want that huge pile of cards again. I don't ever want to get it to what it was when I first started doing this stuff. Me and Ross were talking about before about the card system. When you get it down to very few, you do not want to add to it again, I can tell you. You want to keep it down. And so I'm very, very careful how I talk to people most times. I'm very, very careful. I had an example, and geez, wives are good, aren't they, Paul? I don't get on with my stepmother, and we just butt heads. So how I am kind of loving towards that situation, I spend as little amount of time with her as I possibly can. Okay? And that's the kind and loving thing I can do, because otherwise I'm going to be arguing with her and we're going to be at odds. So the kind and loving thing is to keep her at arm's length. Okay? That's what I've come up with, me and God and sponsor. And through a set of circumstances, she had a crack at my daughter, and my daughter rang me crying. And so what is the fatherly thing to do? You wait, I'm going to freaking show her. And I'm picking the phone up, and my wife says to me, "Go ahead, do you want to make amends to her?" Because I don't like doing it. I said yesterday, I don't like doing it. And I've had great experiences at it, but it's not my favourite thing in AA to do, I can tell you. And so I try and be very careful the way I speak to people today, and very careful the way I treat people, because I don't want to go and make amends. And so I start to see that amends keeps me... Ross, you know, it's one of the most important steps. It's the spiritual experience starts to happen, because I start to change and I start to act and behave differently because of the consequences if I do it, don't do it, far outweigh the consequences of trying to be, you know, live on a spiritual basis. So, and as Pete said yesterday, and then it says, sorry, we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help, love and tolerance as well as they cope. Now, I always thought that meant to me, I've got to call someone straight away and see if I can help them. It doesn't say that. It says we just turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And it doesn't even say that we have to do it with an AA member. It says turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And I've used that, most of the time it is AA members, but sometimes it's just, you know, I've had to help my auntie out, who's 90 years old, and they've got to go into a Watson care, and they're really, so I turn my thoughts, how can I help them? Because any time I turn my thoughts to somebody else, it takes me out of that selfishness and self-centeredness, because my laser vision isn't focused back on me, it's focused on somebody else. And I think that includes everyone. I don't think it necessarily has to be AA members, you know. And that opens the field, doesn't it? It doesn't narrow it down to, oh, I better think about other AA members. I can think about family, you know, people that are struggling, you know, I started to think about, and it's an outside issue, but that what went on in Sydney, I started to think, how lucky am I? Talking thoughts of those poor families. And, geez, it takes me out of myself, straight away. And as Pete said yesterday, I love these promises better than the Step 9 promises, because you think about the magnitude of these promises. You know, Step 9 promises are good, but you think about it when you can't stop drinking, you can't seem to make, headway in life, and then you read these promises. It says, we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for sanity will have returned. We're going to be seldom interested in liquor, and if tempted, we're going to recall from like a hot flame. How much hope does that give to someone who can't stop drinking? I'm going to get into a position where I'm going to recall from it as from a hot flame, and I'm going to see sanity's going to return, and I'm not going to fall for that insane idea that the drink's going to fix it anymore. That's a power of hope for someone who can't stop drinking. A power of hope. We react sanely and normally. Well, some people will argue whether I'm sane and normal sometimes, but we're going to find that this has happened automatically. We'll see that our new attitude towards liquor have been given us without thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. So I'm not even trying to do this stuff. I think I said yesterday about the defects of character. I'm not trying to change them. It doesn't say that, I'm dishonest, I'm going to try my hardest to be honest and try and overcome this dishonest. It doesn't say that. It just says, do these other things and your life will change over here. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. AA says, do this and your life will change over here. And I go, no, it won't. In the material world, that doesn't make sense to me. But in the spiritual world, that makes perfect sense to me. And so I do these things over here and my life changes over here. And I can't work it out because that's got nothing to do with the problems that I got over here. And this is the same thing. It starts to happen automatically. If I put these practices in place, it just happens automatically. I start to react sanely and normally. I actually have intuition and start to get some good ideas, and I start to get some good direction coming from in here. It says, we feel as though we've been placed in a position neutrally, safe and protected. We're not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. We're neither cocky nor afraid. Now, I've heard that taken out of context. Recovered. Well, it does say that you're recovered, but it says in the next second, what I really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. You know what reprieve means? I've looked it up. It means stay of execution. It kind of puts step 10 in a different perspective, doesn't it? What I've got is a stay. And isn't that true? If I don't do the... I love to say I coined a lot of phrases in AA, but I haven't coined any. But I think I can claim fame to one is that I wish I grew spiritually as quick as I go backwards. Yeah? It's a long slog growing spiritually. It's like climbing Mount Everest and you take your foot off the gas and you slide down 100 feet. It's like, and this is the same, so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition and I'll get a stay of execution. And it says it's easy to rest on our laurels, and resting on your laurels means that, I've got accolades and I just go, well, I don't need to do anything now. That's resting on your laurels. I've peaked. I've made it to the pinnacle of what I've achieved. I've got it. That's it. Done. Job done. AA says we can't rest on our laurels here. We've got to keep doing this. We're headed for trouble, we do, because alcohol is a subtle fuel. We're not cured. Every day is a day we must carry the vision as God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. I love the way that the prayers at the start are really long and they start getting shorter and shorter and shorter. It's just as simple as that. Someone said one yesterday I thought it was brilliant. Who was it? Anyway, Bob's told me some good ones. God, I'm really scared. Can you help me out? It's like, just the simple prayers for me work fantastic. I don't have to go. I don't think God says, you're coming to me with the wrong prayer, Chris. No, that's not the right prayer. I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares how I talk to him, really, as long as I'm talking to him. So I don't have to, look, I'm not saying that prayers are, I've got a lot of set prayers that I do. We've printed out some prayers. They're great prayers. I've got other ones. I like Thomas Merton stuff, and there's lots of good stuff out there. But sometimes the simplest prayers are the best. Help me. Help me. I need help. It's a proper use. We can exercise our willpower along this line. It is a proper use of the will. So, again, turn towards God. Please help me align my will with how God would have me be. A guy said to me, you know, there's a fix, Chris, for all problems that you ever have in your life and any decision that you need to make. And you ask this question: what would God have me do in this situation? It sounds really easy, doesn't it? Except when you're really pissed off with someone and want to treat them badly. Want to get revenge. What would God have me do in this situation? What would God have me do in this situation? And it says, and then it goes on to say, much has already written about receiving strength and inspiration direct from who has all knowledge and power. If we've carefully followed directions, I used to think that meant, you know, earlier directions, not the directions that we've just talked about. If you've carefully followed directions, we're going to begin to sense the flow of His Spirit in us. To some extent, we become God consciousness. And Pete read that out in the spiritual experience. The older members call it, we've tapped this inner resource. And that's what I've started to tap here. I get this. I talked about a knot in the gut yesterday is usually a good indication. I call that a message from my higher power that, you know, maybe there needs to be something done here. Or often get intuition to do this and not do that. And I get this strong voice. And an old timer said to me many, many years ago, Chris, you've got to start following that voice. If that voice is saying, you know, you need to do the next right thing here, follow it. Because if you keep ignoring it, it gets quieter and quieter and quieter. And if you follow it, it gets louder and louder and louder. I'm thinking, what does he mean? I understand what he's talking about today. Follow that inner resource that we get. We tap this vital sixth sense. And for me, it's just this knowing, this feeling inside that I know. I know that everything's going to be all right. I know which way to go on most days. And if I get stuck, I just say, I don't know what to do here. God, can you show me which way I need to go here? And generally, the right answer comes. And it's 99% of the time, it's always the right answer if I follow it. But then I've got this idiot up here that goes, nah, let's go this way. And I suffer the consequences of that. You know, Chuck C says, you know, you can either live a God-directed life or a self-directed life. But either one, you've got to suffer the consequences. Would you rather suffer the consequences as a self-directed life or suffer the consequences of a God-directed life? I think I'll choose the God-directed life. And so that's, you know, step 10. And step 11, I won't talk a lot because...
straight into it.
You know, we want to realise it's a big weekend. You know, step 11, it says, you know, suggest prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than us have been using it constantly. It works. We have proper attitude, work at it. It will be easy to vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And, you know, I read through that and thought, yeah, and I can find some better stuff on the internet. And possibly can. There's heaps, you know. We're blessed today with, you know, you type in meditation, you're going to go down rabbit holes you wish you'd never went down. Because there's so much stuff there. But there's a lot of useful stuff there. You know, I've typed in AA 11-step meditation, found some fantastic stuff. But something, I've been on meditation weekends, I've done a lot of ones I picked, they're free because I'm a tight ass, so I'll go to the free ones and learn lots of different practices over the years. Really, you know, I've done, you know, open eye meditation, I've done chanting meditation, I've done quiet meditation. I went to a meditation weekend, I didn't realise it was a silent weekend, and that's pretty tough when you want to, when your head's, and you want to talk, and they don't, you can't talk for the week. It gets pretty hard when you... You know, and so I've done lots and lots of different stuff over the years. Has any of it been bad? No. Has any of it enhanced my stuff? Yes. It's all good. But something always draws me back to the simplistic way that it's written in the Big Book. And I don't think, and this is only my opinion, and everyone's got opinions, it's like, I don't think the meditation that we have today is what Bill Wilson was talking about when he wrote this in 1939. Meditation over the years, and I heard a speaker say one day it went through the 60s and it got all... it became a different thing. I think from what I've read in the history stuff, and Peter probably can talk about it better than me, it was just contemplation, really. It was just praying and then listening. That's it. Praying and then listening. It wasn't about, you know, getting on some spiritual high top or... and so I think the simplistic way that it's written in the book is gold. Is gold. So at the start I said I asked this new sponsor for help, and one of the first things he told me to do, he said, I want you to do a written nightly review every night. Now I go, yes sir, no sir, because that's how I was brought up in AA. But back in my mind thinking, really? What? How am I going to find time to do that? Because I got, you know, my time's important. But you know what? I thought, I'm going to follow directions, you know, and so I started doing, I just started answering the questions. When we retire at night, we constructively return. I'm sure most people in this room do that, yeah? Most people have heard of that. Well, back 14 years ago, that was virtually unheard of. I bet Ross probably knew about it, but there's not a lot of people that would have known about doing a nightly written nightly review. I'd never heard of it before. I used to sit there in, at the night time and go, when I retire, I construct a review. And I'm asleep. And so I started doing it. I set it up on the computer. I set a template up on the computer. And he said, they're not yes or no questions, a bit like the questions you got on step one. Don't just go yes, 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 no, 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 no. Answer them with substance. It's like anything. The more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And so I started answering those questions, you know, was I resentful? Well, yeah, you know what, I was resentful. And I just started doing that. I just started doing it. And it was a pain in the ass for the first couple of months, but then it just became habitual. It's like, I got even clever when smartphones came out and I just got it on my smartphone then. So me and my missus sit up every night in bed doing our nightly review, you know. And look, for the first probably 10 years, I probably didn't miss one night, but I've got a bit, you know, lazy with it. So, you know, I'm trying to get back into... I probably do it most nights. I might miss a couple of nights, but I do it most nights because I need to keep me in check. I'm not left to my own devices. I can go all over the shop. And so the template's written there, and it says something very important at the end, which you know, I've got to be weary of. It says that, you know, this is not morbid reflection. Don't drift into morbid reflection. This is not about beating yourself up about, oh yeah, I stuffed up today and I made all these mistakes. This is about seeing that I've made mistakes, now I'm in a position to change. We talked about finding stuff objectionable yesterday in step 6 and 7. I ain't going to change nothing until I find it objectionable. And if I don't see it, it's not even on my radar. But if I'm doing this stuff, stuff appears on the radar out of nowhere. Oh, okay. And so now I'm in a position, and at the end of it, it says, you know, we I shouldn't quote it, I'll just read it. It says, after making our review, we ask, which every time they say we ask in the book, it's a prayer, forgiveness, and we inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So how I do it, I say, okay, God, thanks for the day. Do a bit of a gratitude thing. Thank you for all you've given me. I want a constructive and review me day. Please show me the answers to these questions, because I forget shit. And so then, so it's a prayer to start off with. I sit down and do the thing. Then I say a prayer. Please forgive me, God. What corrective measures need to be taken here? And then I just sit in contemplation. It's as simple as that. And you'd be surprised what stuff comes to me. You need to go and say sorry. You need to treat that person better. Maybe you want to try and be a bit less selfless tomorrow. You know, maybe you need to make that phone call. Just stuff comes out of nowhere. I'm just, okay. And so I write that down, because that's my preparation for the next day. That's how I prepare for the next bit that it tells me to do. So that's how I do most nights. I even did it last night when I went to bed early. late. Because I need to see where I'm going wrong so I can correct it. or with God's help that I can correct it. So it says, you know, when we wake up on awakening. Now, how I first started doing this, I just turned that whole bit into a prayer. I just said, you know, I changed it to a prayer. That's just the way I did it. If that gets you to, if that gets you into the discipline of doing it, by all means doing it. But I do it a little bit different now. I sort of say it as a bit of a prayer, and then I sit in contemplation with it. But ultimately, the first thing I bring in was, well, what came to me last night? I need to call Pete, or I need to do this, or I need to do that. That becomes my intention. Someone said that yesterday, my intention for the day. Okay, you need to make these calls, Chris. So it's the first thing that comes up. You know, I'm asking for, it says on awakening, let us think about the 24th, we consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God. So I say, please, God, can you direct my thinking? Please make it be divorced of self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Please help me employ my mental faculties with assurance. Please, you know, you gave me brains to use. Please help my thought life be placed on a much higher plane. Please help my thinking be cleared of wrong motives. That's just the prayer I say, and then I just sit there in contemplation about what I need to do today. What's a rough... I don't plan the whole day out. I just go, there's certain things that I want to achieve and get done, and that's what I want. How am I going to do these things? And it says, you know, sometimes in thinking about our day, there's going to be indecision. So what do I do when I get indecision now? I ask, God, I don't know which way to go here. Please give me inspiration, intuition, or decision. Help me relax and take it easy. Help me not to struggle. And then I contemplate. So for me, the morning stuff is all about prayer, contemplation, prayer, contemplation, prayer, contemplation. And it doesn't take long, guys. I can do this in 10 minutes, flat, easy. Start off with, it's a bit hard because you're sort of referring back to the book, but I've sort of got a bit of a mantra with it now, which I just do. And that works for me. That's part of my staying spiritually fit, keeping in that spiritual plane, you know, trying to do the best that I can do. And where that's taken me, you know, I've done lots of, I still do that and other meditation stuff because I like it. I really like it. I like the way it makes me feel. I've gone down all sorts of rabbit holes with different stuff, which is okay. Again, I talked with a few guys last night. He's not here. Said, you got to be careful with that stuff. I said, definitely. Anything that diverts me from my primary purpose has to go. Okay? Because I've seen guys get so caught up in this stuff, they just drift off over in this direction. They forget their primary purpose is that I've still got to do what Pete's going to talk about next. That has to be the main focus on what I do here. I've seen people get caught up in church, and I've got nothing against church, and they find God or whatever, and they're so in time with the church that they forget about what their primary purpose is to help other alcoholics. I've seen more people come unstuck doing that because they've got caught up in other stuff. And there's lots of stuff out there, but as long as I stick to my primary purpose, I don't see anything wrong with any of that stuff. But that's the proviso. I've got to keep remembering always that I'm here to help other people. I'm here to help other alcoholics, nothing more. I won't say too much more. Look, I had a great talk in my sleep last night, but most of it's all gone, and I was going to dazzle you with, you know, my knowledge, but it's not about that. Self-knowledge is useless to you. Bob's very big with, you know, the ego loves knowledge. The ego loves to gain knowledge and information, and this is not a knowledge program. We have information and we have guidelines, but ultimately it's an action program. It's about taking actions. It's about taking actions that I don't really believe will work for me, but I'm going to do them anyway because I got no other choice. I've seen too many people try to intellectualise this and try and figure it out and work it out and turn it into a Freudian exercise. And as Pete said yesterday, Dr. Bob warned us about that. Leave that to the scientific minds. We're not scientific minds here. Let's just keep it very, very simple and take the simple actions that are. And I've never seen a simpler set of prayer and meditation as I've ever seen written on step 11. And at the end it says, you know, we're an undisciplined lot. Try and discipline yourself in the simple way that we've just outlined. And then it says, but there's action and there's more action. On to you, Pete.
Thanks, Chris. My name's Peter. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much, Chris. That was fantastic. I asked Chris if he'd help me do this. We've done this before together, and I'm just so glad that he was in town. He was able to do this. It's been a pleasure to sit back and listen and learn and have stuff that I've forgotten to be reaffirmed once again. My job's to talk about step 12. That'll take us out of this session. I hope to have us out of here by 10:15, and by that time, you'll be ready to go. I'm not going to say anything more than what Chris just said, other than to point out something that I mentioned the other day. On page 45, he told me what my problem was in three words. He said, lack of power, that was my dilemma. And then I went through 8 short questions, which just absolutely defines what the book was about. Its main object was to enable me to find a power that will solve my problem. And so somewhere between page 45 and where Chris just took us, which was page 85, 40 pages, those 10-step promises came true. So somewhere between pages 45 and 85, in 40 pages, I've found that power. I've found that power because that power has solved the problem. That power has restored me back to sanity. That power has given me the ability to recall as if tempted as from a hot flame. That power has given me the ability that if I fell into a vat of scotch, which was my drink of choice, I would do backstroke. I have no interest. The problem has been removed. I'm not cocky, nor am I afraid, but that's how I react so long as I do the actions and the work that Chris talked about. I loved when he said that they're not maintenance steps. They are growth steps. It's like being on an upward elevator. If I stop trying to run up an upward elevator, I'm going backwards. I'm not going forward. And I need to continue to be moving forward and taking actions. And throughout the book a few times he says that faith without works is dead. And that's another piece of scripture. And I think 2 or 3 times probably that he uses that reference. So I'm not going to read much, if any at all. I was going to jump around and do a couple of quick things, maybe talk a little bit about history. But I just wanted to start with something that's not even AA. This was from the medical point of view on AA. And it was from Dr. W.W. Boer, broadcasting under the auspices of the American Medical Association in 1946 over the NBC network, said in part, Alcoholics Anonymous are no crusaders, not a temperance society. They know they must never drink. They help others with similar problems. In this atmosphere, the alcoholic often overcomes his excessive concentration upon himself, learning to depend upon a higher power and absorb himself in his work with helping other alcoholics. That's step 12 right there. Step 12 is about my trying to work with other alcoholics. Step 12, it gives me the greatest promise of all the steps. It says, it's the ultimate goal of what I go through the steps for, is it says having had a spiritual awakening, having had that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. And Chris talked about what Ibby did for Bill. You know, every person here and me have the privilege of being in Alcoholics Anonymous because of 12-step work. And that 12-step call that Ebby made on Bill, and there was just a couple of little components of that I just wanted to touch on, because it's really important for me to remember this, and if I'm going to be useful as a person who's trying to participate in 12-step work, this was a very, very good example of what to do and for me what not to do. When Ebby called on him, we know the story, sitting around the table, pushed a drink his way, you know, what's going on there, and he said, I'm not drinking, I've got religion. Bill said, well, he was aghast, he thought that he was an alcoholic crackpot, he was going to get locked up for particular things he did, and he'd come to chat to Bill. And he said, well, bless his heart, let him rant. Let him rant. Because my gin will outlast his ranting. And you know, Ebby's sitting there and you can see Bill sitting back, knocking back gin. Yes, Ebby, tell me more, tell me more. But here's the thing I wanted to try and highlight, is that Ebby did no ranting. Ebby didn't do any ranting. He didn't have his finger in Bill's chest saying, you must do this, you must do that, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. He didn't do any of that. All Ebby did was he sat there. What are you smiling about over there? Are you saying that I did that to you? Well, I may have.
He's a changed man.
That was a long time ago. And we do claim spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. I'd like to think I've softened a little. He did no ranting. He did no raving. In a matter of fact way, all he did was he sat down and explained how a couple of guys who had appeared in court had brought to him a simple religious idea and a program of action, and he'd come to share it with Bill if he'd wanted it. And Bill said, well, obviously I wanted it because I was hopeless. You see, Ebby's example to Bill was the thing that sold Bill. Bill knew Ebby as a drinker. They'd been on those jags. They'd done those things. The aeroplane. We know the stories. Ebby was somebody who Bill related to, yet Ebby became that power of example. We talked about it through yesterday, the night before, whatever, that Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of attraction, it's a program of attraction, it's a results-orientated program, it's an evidence-based program. And Wilson said that his whole deportment was different. His footing, his roots were grasping new soil. He was a totally changed person. He said, was I interested? He said he had to be interested because he was utterly hopeless. Utterly hopeless. I want to... In that conversation and his dealings with Ebby at that time, Wilson was in and out of Towns Hospital a number of times, and I understand that Silkworth had worked with him. He couldn't stay sober. He thought self-knowledge was great. Out he goes, armistice, he's drunk again and back in hospital, and Ebby comes in and goes through and helps him through that process. When he made Bill ask... tell me again about that little set of principles that you were talking about. He made him ask. Ebby didn't come and force him down his throat at the hospital either. He made him ask. Ebby explained. We know what happened. Bill was lifted onto the mountaintop and the wind of spirit blew through him. He was changed. The doctor came the next day he recovered. Ebby emphasised the absolute necessity that Bill... would need to practice and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, because if he didn't, he wouldn't. Chris said it before, he wouldn't survive. They're coming. The certain trials and low spots ahead. Being sober does not give me immunity against life on life's terms and what's coming down the pipe. Stuff's going to happen. That hammer is going to hit me on the head at different times. It's going to happen. But Ebby said that if Bill enlarged his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, that he would recover. He would survive it. And then we know from Bill's story that he on many occasions was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment, which almost drove him back to drink. And thank God he didn't practice doona therapy. Thank God he didn't say, oh God, geez, I just want to go and sit in a corner and feel sorry about myself. He went back to the hospital. We know from Silkworth's, you know, description of all of that, you know, with some misgivings, we consented. You know, imagine that. Here's a doctor working in this renowned hospital for treating alcoholics of that era, that he's allowing some bloke who's about 8 seconds sober to come into the hospital and try and help others. And with some misgivings, we consented, and he said the cases we looked at were amazing. the unselfishness of these men. He said it was incredibly inspiring to one who'd labored so long in that area. So Silkworth saw the results. I just want to fast forward real quick and chat about a couple of things. So Wilson had been trying to employ that formula of working with another alcoholic because he said it was a design for living which works in rough going. He knew from his practical experience that trying to help another alcoholic somehow made him feel better. Just, you know, he coined that design for living. And he'd been doing it for 6 months or so. And he'd been running into the Bowery, he'd been running into different men's shelters and all over the place trying to drag guys into AA and get them into the Oxford group and drag them down to the Calvary Church, wherever it was. And having zero success, absolute zero success. And we all know the story. He said to his wife, you know, this hasn't been working. I haven't kept anyone sober. And she said, but it's kept you sober. You know, that work was keeping him sober. And he sort of got his life back together just a little bit, and he had an opportunity to go on a proxy fight and try and take over a machine tool company in Akron, Ohio. And just prior to his visit to Akron, Ohio, he went back to the doctor and he said to Silkworth, I've been trying to help these guys. I've been really working hard with them. I've been, you know, trying to share with them and help them like I was helped. But, you know, I haven't been able to help one of them. And he said, my boy, he said, what you've got is you've got the cart before the horse. He said, what you've been trying to do is you've been trying to jam what happened to you at the town's hospital. You've been trying to jam this spiritual awakening, this evangelical, life-changing, religious, conversionary experience that happened to you. You've been trying to jam that down the throats of alcoholics. And he said, they're going to puke it straight back up, and that's not why it's working. Your approach is wrong. He said, what you need to do is you need to soften them up. Tell them a little bit more about the precondition. Tell them about the stuff what it is to be an alcoholic. Okay, no problem. So off he goes to Akron. And so he's at Akron. We know what happened. The proxy bid, the fight, he lost that fight. He's in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel. There's a few of us in this room that have paced that lobby of the Mayflower Hotel to try and trace that historic event. And you know, when he's confronted with the phone box and had a series of names on it, that's still there. You can go and see it. And picks a name off that. We know that he got in contact with a doctor in that town that he had an opportunity to try and help. Now this doctor is Dr. Robert Holbrook Smith. This is Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob had been working for 2 years in the Oxford group. He's a very, very spiritual man. If Wilson had have gone over there and tried to preach spiritual terms to Dr. Bob, we wouldn't be sitting here tonight, be very sure. Dr. Bob had, he was, everybody had prayed for Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob had worked extremely hard, you know, trying to pray and whatever, and it just wasn't working. Through a set of circumstances, he got to meet Dr. Bob at the Cyberling Gatehouse, at the gatehouse of the mansion of the Cyberling Tire Company's property. And you can go there. It's a museum now. You can go there and trace those steps. And he extracted, that was his words, he extracted from Anne, his wife, I'll give this mug 15 minutes. That's it, no more. 15 minutes. And they get together. They go into the sitting room or whatever at the gatehouse, and they start talking. Now, I'm going to paraphrase what I believe was how that conversation might have started off. But Wilson probably might have said something to him like, and Dr. Bob might have said, look, you know, how are you going to help me? And Wilson might have said something along the lines of, well, I don't know so much of how I'm going to help you, but talking to guys like you helps guys like me. See, Wilson was there bringing a life-saving message and a life-changing message to somebody else. Somebody else bringing help and the other one giving help. Now, to let you know how that conversation went, Dr. Bob said he'd give him 15 minutes. Now, from Dr. Bob's story, that conversation lasted 6 hours and 15 minutes. And in Dr. Bob's personal story, Dr. Bob said he was the first living human being with her who he had ever spoken, who knew of drinking, not because of he'd read it in books, but from his own actual experience. See, it was one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. It wasn't a preacher talking down to an alcoholic or a counsellor telling an alcoholic. It was one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. And when Dr. Bob understood what it was as to be an alcoholic from personal, practical experience, he could pursue that spiritual remedy. One more little piece on that before I get out of there. I know a guy who Ross would have heard young Smitty talk a number of times. Young Bob Smith, Dr. Bob's son. I heard him at the 1995 convention in San Diego. He spoke there, and he was always known as Young Smitty. Well, Young Smitty was there at the gatehouse, and a friend of mine was talking to Young Smitty, and he said to Young Smitty, he said, "Listen, what was it like for you? You know, Dad's drunk, and these guys coming, and whatever, and trying to help, and..." What about that incident at the gatehouse? And he said, "You know, it was quite funny. We were sitting in the room, and my dad said he was only going to be there 15 minutes. And, you know, we're sitting there and waiting for him, and we could hear laughter. My dad was laughing." And he said it was the first time in so many years that he'd heard his father laugh. Now, I get that. We get that. I go to a meeting and I hear somebody share a horrific story and we laugh, not because we're laughing at them, because I'm laughing with that empathy, with that unconditional positive regard that, you know what, that's happened to me too. I've done that stuff. Working with others is the most important step there is in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some people say that you need to give it away to keep it. Well, you don't give it away to keep it, you give it away to get it. The only way I get this is by giving it away. Working with others is the thing that enlarges and perfects my spiritual life and helps me to continue to stay sober. I get the results, which is having had a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening as a consequence of this, is personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, the entire psychic change, however many different definitions that we've learned as we've gone through that mean the same thing. And what I have to do with it is I have to carry that message. I have to carry this message, not my message, not some watered down version, not some, well, just don't worry about that, go to meetings, and that might work for some people, But for alcoholics of my type, and I'm a high-maintenance guy, I'm a guy that doesn't do very well doing very little. I do very little. I get goofy. I do very little, and I start noticing things, and my noticer really starts to take note of stuff. The watcher that Chris talked about, you know, I see a lot of people doing stuff wrong. You know, you know what? What was that Bruce Willis movie, The Sixth Sense? You know, I see dead people. I see idiots. You know? That's my sixth sense. Everybody becomes an idiot, and I'm very. It doesn't take much to be agitated. I love all those prayers talked about that Chris talked about. You know, I was with Clancy one time. He said the best prayer he ever heard was, "God, make me into the kind of person my dog thinks I am." I want to be that guy. Yeah. I do. I want to be that guy. But I'm not that guy because I'm a selfish, self-centered individual that thinks way too much about me. And the thing that stops me thinking about me is when I try and help somebody else. Throughout the book, it gives me one solution to all problems, and that is I've got problems in this area, I've got problems in that area, I've got problems with sex, go and try and help somebody else, because it will quiet the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. Working with others is the thing that works in rough going, and it takes me out of me. And I'll give you an example. And I'll give you an example of my approach to trying to help others, which is a little different to how it used to be, but I believe that this is the truth. I was in Ireland one time in Cork County, and on a Friday night I was in a meeting, and it was a meeting. I was sitting around in a circle, and I used to like the blood and guts meetings in Melbourne, and I'd chase them out when I was. And the more horrific the story, we were talking last night, Ross and I, those old war stories, and they were great, and I loved them. And the more the more downgraded, and the drunks come in, and loved it. I just loved that environment. I go to North Melbourne, and I thought I'd been to some sort of pretty sort of down and out, rough and tough meetings, and whatever. But this one at Ireland was sort of next level, and they had a policy. And they had a policy in this meeting that if a guy wanted to drink, they'd pass the basket around the room and take up a collection for him and give him the basket and say, if you want to drink, go and drink. Obviously, you don't want to do what's on offer here. Maybe going out and being beaten to a state of reasonableness might change your mind. I thought, geez, that's a bit rugged. Because for years, working with others, I've got my finger in their chest pointing at them saying, listen, you shouldn't drink and you should do this and you should... I don't believe that's my job. The only thing that's going to convince anyone, the only thing that convinced me to come to Alcoholics Anonymous was the pain of not being here. And if I come here and it's not working, maybe the pain of going back out is going to bring me back with enough willingness to do what it is that I need to do here. My job as a person involved in 12-step work and trying to carry the message in Alcoholics Anonymous is simply no more than what Ebby did for Bill, and that is to just lay out a simple kit of spiritual tools. I go to the prison. I've been going to the prison for a lot of years. I started going to prison when I was 2 years sober, and that was at Pentridge. Pentridge isn't a prison anymore. It's pretty, you know, upper market, high. And my approach with the guys in prison hasn't really changed, but it's maybe got a little honed over the time. But some days I don't want to do it, really. Every Tuesday I go in there, really. I got stuff to do. I'm busy. I mean, most of you guys would understand it. I'm busy. I mean, I don't know what I'm busy doing, but I'm busy. Whatever I'm doing, I'm busy doing what I... But I don't want to be... But I made a commitment. I go there and I wander in and go through the whole process and sit down, set the meeting up. Set it up exactly the same as we set meetings up here. Try to replicate what an AA meeting would actually look like and start with a preamble and give those guys the opportunity that if ever they, you know, they go to a meeting outside, it would look like what a meeting looked like that we ran in prison. And I'm really pragmatic, very, very pragmatic with them. And I sit there and I tell them straight off the bat, I'm not here trying to recruit anybody for Alcoholics Anonymous. Be extremely sure about that. I don't get paid to do this. I do this for free and for fun. You see, coming here and talking to guys like you helps guys like me. You want a drink? Knock yourself out. Go and drink. I've helped guys in prison that went out and drank, but then they've come to Alcoholics Anonymous because they remembered that day that idiot came and spoke to them, me. And that's all I'm there for. I'm there not to talk anybody into doing anything but to lay out that simple kit of spiritual tools for their inspection, to tell them the truth. And in 12-step work, I found that to be very effective. So why do I do that? I drag my feet in there, talk to those guys, but when I leave there, my feet don't touch the ground. I tell those guys that talking to guys like you helps guys like me. It's like you plug me into a 240-volt socket and it just lights me up. It lights me up. I get a charge out of trying to help others. I get put on such a high when I try and help others, way better than it was when I drank. Why would I want to drink? Why would I want to drink? The whole entire time that I'm working with other people is I'm distracted from my primary purpose. You see, my primary purpose is the 12th step. My primary purpose is trying to carry the message to alcoholics. My primary purpose is to ensure that my group does exactly the same thing. That the single most laser-pointed thing that I do is to try and be helpful to others. And I do that for one reason and one reason only. And the first paragraph of working with others tells me why I do it. Because when I do that, nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. You see, every time I try and help somebody, I get insurance. I get insurance and immunity against me going back to drinking. But what does it really do for me, working with others? Well, my primary purpose is me. My singleness of purpose is me. I am a self-centered, self-serving, selfish, self-gratifying individual. I may be interested in you, but I tell you, I'm only interested in you for what I can get from you. I am primary purpose-driven. And I can, every once in a while, revert back to that. You might find that surprising. I know you guys don't have that problem, but I do. I wake up and I'm usually okay, and I don't think I've got too many problems until I start thinking about things. Jesus, God. Sometimes I wonder how I'm doing so well with the amount of problems I've got. I really am busy. How am I going to do that? I'm overwhelmed. I'm consumed with me. And what happens? The phone rings. Oh, God, look at the phone. Really? I mean, this is inconvenient. I really don't want to take this call. You see what I'm saying here? Because I'm very busy at the moment. I'm busy thinking about me, and I'm busy trying to solve all my problems. I'm busy trying to come to terms with the amount of problems that I've got that I'm surprising I'm doing so well with the ones that I have. And I know it's one of those guys. It's one of the AA guys. Really? And I listen. Yeah. Okay. Right. Good. Might even go on a heart machine. Maybe every now and once in a while it does. Yep. Right. And I get off that phone, and then I try and think, hang on, what was I worried about before that phone call? You see, working with others distracts me. Working with others stops me thinking about me. Working with others helps me to fulfill the goals or the ultimate promises or the ultimate requests of what AA suggests. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Relieve me of me. How do I get relieved from me? I get relieved from me by thinking of others. I think of others and I get forced to think of others because I'm busy trying to help other people. I try and help a lot of people because I need a lot of distractions. I need to be divinely inconvenienced often to be taken away from thinking about me. And the more I do that, the better I feel. The bigger the payday for me. As Chris said, you know, I want to fix these problems over here, but, you know, I somehow get diverted spiritually in this, you know, upside down world of fix this, help this, and that gets solved anyway. The more I concentrate on there rather than my primary problems die through neglect. They die through atrophy. I don't give them any time. The 12th step is the most important thing that I can do. The 12th step is the thing that Alcoholics Anonymous tries to do in absolutely every area of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every aspect, every facet of Alcoholics Anonymous is 12-step work. I belong to a home group, and my home group is a three legacy home group. My home group is involved in all three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have guys at district, we have guys in public information, we have guys at general service, we have people in prison, we have guys looking after rehabs, we have guys in all avenues of Alcoholics Anonymous. We look at the conference topics, we send our responses to them back to the general service board, the general service. Every aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous has one laser focus, and that is 12-step work. The General Service Board, the literature, conferences, public information campaigns are all to do one thing. And that is to let the guy know who's not here how to get here. Let the person know who's walking around out there thinking, geez, I wish I'm so screwed up with alcohol and I wish I knew what to do. And he walks out and he sees a billboard. AA, 1-300, whatever the number is. If you've got a problem with drinking, call us. 12th step work. Every person in Alcoholics Anonymous participates in 12th step work in the capacity that they can. From the guy who's one day sober to the guy who's 50 years sober, everybody participates in 12th step work. Whether it's the guy who opens the meeting, to the guy who makes the coffee, to the people who are helping to provide an environment where people can go to recover, are participating in 12-step work. 12-step work is the most important thing that Alcoholics Anonymous does. It is the only thing Alcoholics Anonymous does. It is the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I make it my primary purpose, I get to lead a pretty decent life. I get to not have to think too much about me. If there's St. Francis prayer, it says it's only through self-forgetting that one finds, I don't forget me when I'm thinking about me, but I forget me when I'm thinking about you. this has been a really, really wonderful weekend. I've had such a good time doing this. I was really nervous when I became more and more nervous. It's been on the game plan for a while to do this weekend, and I've had a wonderful experience. I hope you guys have too. But I want to reiterate something that I said the other day, and that is that I am a person who is flawed, extremely flawed. And if I might sound good at this, it's because I've worked at it for a long time. And I've worked at it a long time because I'm that flawed individual that if I'm not engaged in this, if I'm not trying to help others, if I'm not trying to make sure that my group is strong and carrying that 12-step message, I become really, really goofy. And I have a life beyond my wildest dreams today, and I've never mistaken the reasons why. I've got a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I've been able to achieve a lot, but I've never let the life that I've got today stop me from the reason that gave me the life. I've never been so busy in my life today that I can't go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is still the main connection in my life that enables all that rest of it to happen. And 12-step work is the game changer, and it is the end game. Don't miss it. I think we're done.
God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things